Hello and welcome to the Android Central podcast, bright and early on Saturday, August 10th, 2019. My name is Daniel Bader, and if my audio sounds a bit off this week, it's because I'm not in my usual studio, and I'm far away from home, and I'm really, really regretting not being in New York for the Samsung Unpacked event. With the two gentlemen on this call, Andrew Martinick and Hayato Huseman, welcome back to the show. How are you feeling bright and early?
I am feeling tired, and I'm feeling, well, it's weird because when you come back to the West Coast, you wake up early naturally because you've kind of adjusted to the time zone, but you're also just tired because you spent the night at JFK Airport after your flight getting canceled and then had to rep yourself through San Francisco with an extra flight on the way back. So, you know, it balances out a little bit.
Right. This is the royal you, as in like everybody does this, not
yes,
just you.
That's just how you get back from New York. Just FYI, if you don't live on the normal West Coast route.
Right.
Yeah. It takes a really, really long time. It's like we're, you know, in the early 1900s.
Right. Air travel has become considerably less efficient in 2019, apparently. Hayato, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling a bit more rested than Andrew because my flight was not canceled, but I'm preemptively tired because I'm just heading right back out in like 5-6 days. So I'll be exhausted again very soon, I'm sure.
Well, we like you exhausted because that means that you're doing a lot of really good video work for us. So this you two were at the Unpacked event with our coworker Michael Fisher, Mr. Mobile, who unfortunately wanted to but could not be on the show with us this morning. He sends his regards and hot takes. And if you haven't checked out his Note 10 video yet, go check it out on YouTube. But we're going to talk all Note 10 and 10 Plus today, and we'll start from the show, because you know this was a big event at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, and this isn't the first time Samsung has launched a product there, but you know, I think they've made it a bit more efficient. You know, DJ Ko comes out, he says his thing about how Samsung is, you know, the best at what it does, and it makes the nicest hardware, and it's working on its software. And then he introduces the Note 10, and then a bunch of other people come out and talk about the features. So we'll start with the phones. Andrew, two phones this year, Note 10 and Note 10 Plus. Mm-hmm. They're powerful. Their variable size. There's a small one for people who hate big phones, but there are some major differences between them. So let's go through them.
Yeah, they did this kind of interest. They have this interesting little stepping stones kind of move up from the Galaxy S10 to the Note 10 normal. I don't know. We just call it the Note 10, I guess. And then the S10 Plus and then the Note 10 Plus. So they get bigger incrementally each time. So you have, you know, regular, then an S Pen, then a regular, then an S Pen. The regular Note 10 is the same screen size as the Note 9, but is actually smaller physically than the Note 3, which is very interesting. I kind of started going back after feeling the thing and being like, wow, this thing is really small, going back and looking at the specs of all previous notes. And I made it all the way back to the Note 3 until I found that it was still smaller, which is very impressive. And then at the same time, the Note 10 Plus is gigantic. It's slightly larger than the Note 9, just ever so slightly, but has a 6.8-inch display. And we can get, you know, I think, you know, we'll have long, long discussions about the lack of a micro SD card slot on the Note 10. That's kind of your main difference in terms of what the nerds care about. But the other one is battery life and screen size, of course, because that's just, you know, comes with the territory. Other than that, though, they do the same things and have all the same specs and features, which is good, but also just, you know, full on expected from Samsung at this point. They've standardized across all four of these phones.
Right. So what's really interesting is a lot of people are going to be upgrading from a Note, maybe a Note 5, a Note 8, definitely not a Note 7 unless you're Russell. Or, you know, another Samsung product. And Samsung loves to point out that Note users are super loyal because they love that S Pen. And if you take a look at the naming scheme, you would kind of be, it would be a little bit weird to know that the Note 10 really is not the successor to the Note 9. It's the Note 10 Plus. The Note 10 is this little island over here for people who don't like big phones. Hayato, when you picked these two phones up, because you did most of the filming for these phones, you were in three of the sessions, you got sure a lot was. Of hands-on time with them. What was your impression of that smaller Note 10? Is that the one that you think you would want, or
oh, absolutely.
Is the big Note 10 Plus still the hotness?
Absolutely. I really, really like the small one because, again, it's sort of a phone, I think at least, for people that like the features of the S Pen but don't like giant phones. And I mean, you know, I'm sitting here, I've been using my Pixel 3 off and on for the last several months just because it's so tiny.
I'm so sorry.
Well, you mostly use it off because the battery is dead.
Exactly. Yeah, so I'm hoping the battery on the Note 10 will be at least a bit better. But yeah, you know, there's some trade-offs for sure with going with the smaller phone, as there pretty much always is with any two-size variants of a phone. But I'm super into the small one. It feels like the perfect size in my hand. The Note 10 Plus just kind of feels like, you know, a dinner plate in my hand, basically. And
yeah, I guess. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Hayata.
No. I'm just the 10 is, I think, exactly what I've been hoping for from Samsung. This is pretty much my perfect phone from a hardware standpoint, and I'm hoping that it delivers in every other aspect.
I think it's super interesting. I like the size of it, but to hear how much you just like say this is, you know, this is the perfect size, you know, size, shape, hardware is interesting because, you know, Samsung just hasn't done this before. They've adopted this, of course, on the Galaxy S series, but on the Note series, they've always held that the Note is like the big, you know, going, you know, above and beyond in terms of features. And so the size just has to get bigger. So, I mean, at some point, I'm sure they considered doing this dual size Note strategy. And I wonder what kept them from doing it before, considering, you know, you don't know till you try, I suppose. But it's just very interesting to see that it took them all the way to the Note 10 to give the two sizes a try, because I just frankly don't know how big the market is of people that want the S Pen, but don't also enjoy the positive aspects of the size of the Note 10 Plus, or, you know, whatever the big Note is at the time, because the whole idea is that you don't really care about that trade-off of the size because you're so enamored by having the big screen and the big battery and all the extra features. So I just wonder how big that slice of people is that wouldn't just be better off being, you know, getting a regular Galaxy S10 and just losing the S Pen altogether.
You know, the nice thing is that even with the smaller Note 10, you're still getting a 6.3-inch screen, which is just enormous. I mean,
it's still quite large, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I if I'm remembering right, the Note, the original Galaxy Note was a full inch smaller, right? Like about 5.3 inches?
Yeah, something like that.
So it's a pretty huge difference from there. And it's still like you hold it in your hand, there's still like a ton of screen to work with there. It's just physically not as big as before.
And a lot of that is to do with the fact that the new Infinity O display is right up to the bezels. So the bezels are even smaller than on the S10 series. And the now centered front-facing camera cutout is a quarter the size, they said, as the S10, which is...
And we wouldn't be doing the work of... our esteemed colleague Russell Hawley without talking about that cutout a little bit, because I understand that it's still a cutout and it's very hypocritical of Samsung after making fun of notches and cutouts for so long, but it is so much better than the Galaxy S10 Plus. It's mm-hmm. like a quarter of the size because it's only one camera instead of two, and the cutout is right up to the edges of the camera. So it doesn't have any dead space around the camera either. And being centered and close to the top, It's just, it's as small and unintrusive as possible. It's the best location and as small as possible and as close to the top of the screen as possible that it just doesn't matter to me whatsoever. Whereas the S10 Plus is there and you kind of notice it and it's kind of annoying.
I also think that the centered positioning makes so much more sense.
So much.
Because like even using the S10 Plus, if you can ignore the hole punch up in the top corner, that's fine. But once you take a screenshot, it just looks absolutely ridiculous with everything kind of shoved over to the side. And now a screenshot from a Note 10 is going to look like a screenshot from any other phone. It's just, you know, the aspects of the notification tray up top are going to be on the left and right instead of just kind of, you know, mushed over.
I mean, a lot of the hardware changes are pretty minor over the S10 series, but you know, we still have some significant improvements, at least on the Note 10 Plus. And we have a massive 4,300 milliamp hour battery. We have a redesigned S Pen. We have a, you know, 25 or 45 watt wired charging. We have 15 watt wireless charging, and you know, we have 12 gigs of RAM standard on the big one, 256 gigs of storage standard. We have a depth vision camera, which is basically a time of flight sensor on the back. We have an improved front facing camera, I believe, with autofocus. But there's, you know, we can talk as much about what the Note series gets rid of this iteration as we can about what it adds.
Yeah.
So there's no headphone jack, and on the smaller phone, there is no micro SD card. Both of those things are firsts for the Note line, literally. I mean, they've had them both since the beginning when it was released in 2011. And a lot of people who used to be proponents of the Note series are saying that this is somewhat of a betrayal of those power users, even though you do have a micro SD card on the larger Note 10 Plus. What do you guys think of that?
It had to go away at some point. I'm just very surprised that Samsung didn't try to step it out by maybe removing it from one of, or even all of, the Galaxy S11 line and kind of tempering the water a little bit to then remove it from the Note, you know, successive to that. It's just very odd. Or, you know, just remove it from the small one and not the big one on the Note 10 and 10 Plus. You know, something like that. It's very interesting to see that they just came out and just axed it altogether. I mean, there's something to be said for that strategy as well, you know, just getting it over with. But I just don't, it's just a little double speaky from Samsung, of course, after really planting their flag in having that headphone jack, just like they planted the flag on not having display notches and having this infinity display for so long. And talking about how, you know, Note fans are the, you know, their biggest customers, and they upgrade every year and they love their phones more than anything. And you know, it really feels like the headphone jack was one of those things. But when you start to look at, I'm sure from their perspective, market research and looking at usage data, they probably just found that not enough people were using it to make it worth it. And I understand a lot of people, we talk about this every time that something is removed from a phone, they say, well, what did they do instead? How much bigger is the battery? What other capabilities did they add by removing, you know, XYZ, in this case, the headphone jack? Well, it's just complexity. Anytime that you can, as a manufacturer, you can find out a way to remove something, then you just save yourself complexity in the phone, and that's always a good thing. Whether or not it's directly attributable to a larger battery or another feature or another spec is kind of irrelevant. The manufacturer always wants to make it simpler inside the phone, less things to have to manage to cram in there. And this was just one of those ones where they said, well, we can save a little space, we can save complexity, save another hole in the frame, and our usage data and our market research says that we are not going to lose that many sales from it.
Yeah, I mean, Samsung said that they were able to get between 1 and 200 milliamp hours of additional battery capacity by removing the headphone jack. And they also said that the haptics in the phones should be better because there's more of an open space for the vibration motor to send its sound through. And I think I haven't used the phones yet, so I don't know if you have any experience with the haptics. I'm a big proponent of better haptics in phones, and Samsung has kind of fallen behind. But if they improved, if they got us up to 4,300 milliamp hours on the Note 10 Plus and 3,500 on the Note 10, and they would have been, say, 4,100 and 3,200 or 3,300, I think that's a pretty nice bump. And most people would probably appreciate the extra hour of uptime over the headphone jack.
I wonder if they were saying that it's improved haptics over the Note 9 or over the S10, because in the time that I've messed with the phone, it very much felt, as far as the haptics go, it felt pretty much exactly like an S10. I haven't really handled a Note 9 all that much, so I don't know if that's any different from any of Samsung's newer phones.
No, but they're the same.
Okay.
Samsung's never differentiated itself with haptics. It's always sort of been middle of the road, very fine, but never good.
Oh, I disagree. I think the S8 really brought much better haptics than before.
Sure. I guess the whole industry at that point, though, improved their haptics. I think it's very clear when you have really bad haptics, but now it's also very obvious when you have really good haptics.
Like when I used the Xperia 1 that Hayato's been carrying this week, when I saw him, there is your low, the floor of haptics on a modern smartphone.
I mean, that's a different story, though, because they use that ridiculous, what's it called, the dynamic vibration, and it just
whatever it is, it's wrong.
It just shakes your whole body, and I dislike it. I used to think that it was very, it added a certain je ne sais quoi to some of the interactions you have with the OS, but I've since I've started using the Pixel 3, I have changed my mind on that. I would much rather have the fine detail of really kind of small, sharp haptics than the more, I guess it's just really obnoxiously powerful haptics that they have in the Xperia line now, but
mm-hmm.
I digress. Let's talk about headphone jacks, I guess. The loss of the headphone jack, I think a lot of people will be quite upset by this, but there are USB-C headphones in the box, and at least here in Canada, we're getting a pair of Galaxy Buds with every purchase, which will offset a lot of people's disappointment. And in the US, every pre-order comes with between $100 and $150 of credit to the Samsung store that you can then use towards a pair of Galaxy Buds or something else if you don't have a pair of headphones already.
They give you all of that, but they don't give you a headphone adapter in the box, like the simplest little thing that would fix at least a majority of issues, I think.
Will it, though? I don't think people... I think if they're doing market research to know that it's okay to remove the headphone jack, they probably know that most people hate those dongles and don't ever use them.
Sure, but it's the least you can include on a $1,000 phone.
That's fair. That is true, because it is a $1,000 phone. No, not exactly. We'll get into price a bit later, but you're right. It's not a cheap phone by any stretch. One more thing that is really different from previous Galaxy products is the fact that there are no buttons on the right side anymore. The power button is now on the left side underneath the volume rocker, and the power button doubles as a Bixby button. So I think we learned about this a few weeks before the announcement because of some pretty reliable leaks. But using it, what do you guys think of the actual change? Because it does affect how you hold the phone a little bit, and there's a lot of muscle memory around the power button being on the right side for many people. So what do you think?
I'm here for it. I think it's way, way better than the... I mean, I would probably still prefer to have the power button on the right,
mm-hmm.
but if it was going to be on the right and still paired with that Bixby button on the left, then I far prefer this. Because the problem before is that you pick up the phone to go to, squeeze the phone to press the power button, and you accidentally hit the Bixby button at the same time because it was more accessible further down the phone and you're trying to dodge the volume keys. So if this is, if this is the choice instead of having two separate buttons, I far prefer this, especially on the Note 10 Plus. It's, lower than before, of course, but the phone is so big that it's still, it's not like below that, the halfway mark of the phone. It's still kind of up and out of the way. You're not going to hit it accidentally as much. And the nice thing is that you don't have to contend with two different buttons or anything like that. There's going to be some muscle memory to get rid of from the point of view of if you've been using Samsung phones, you're used to it being a different way. But I, after using the Note 10 Plus for a little while, I picked up my S10 Plus and I was like, what the hell? This power button is way up on the side and it's way out of the way. So I immediately adapted to it and I'm cool with it, especially because it means if you really want to, you just hop in there, turn off Bixby's actions entirely, and you can just go on your merry way using your power button.
Right. So my colleague or our colleague Harish pointed out in his comparison with the P30 Pro that the Note 10 Plus really takes a lot of inspiration from some of Huawei's and Xiaomi's and Oppo's products in the way that it's embracing color, in particular the Aura Glow kind of gradient color, that it's yes. now emphasizing super fast wired charging in 45 watt charging, although I'd argue that Samsung's implementation is far superior because it uses USB power delivery rather than some proprietary garbage, and that there are now four cameras, although the cameras themselves are, you know, it's up for debate whether they're massive improvements over previous versions. So let's talk about that a bit, because we have, you know, there's still a bit of diversity in the specs between the Note 10 and Note 10 Plus, but if you're, most people I think are going to look at that Note 10 Plus and think of that as the de facto Note this year. We have massive specs, 12 gigs of RAM, up to 512 gigs of storage. We have that fourth camera, but we have this 45 watt wired charging and 15 watt wireless charging, 4,300 milliamp hour battery. A lot of people are going to really, really enjoy that. What do you think? Is this Samsung finally like acknowledging that the Chinese OEMs are eating their lunch in certain respects and just giving everybody the specs that they want?
Well, they were dragging their feet in a lot of areas. I still think that they're, we'll talk about the cameras. I think they're dragging their feet in the camera department a little bit, but in things like the charging speeds, they were so far behind
yep.
that they had to catch up big time. And the Note was a good time to do that, especially when you made the battery larger. It was just so weird. Samsung is, you know, they had a really high floor for all of its phones. It's standardized across the lineup, which is fantastic. Everything, for the most part, in the core features and specs were all the same. But, you know, the ceiling wasn't quite as high. They didn't step out and do anything extraordinary. They pushed the envelope on wireless charging a little bit, but they never did anything crazy with audio other than just like, well, the headphone jack is there. And they didn't do anything crazy with wired charging other than, well, it's standardized and now we support quick charge and USB-C PD. They didn't push any of those things that, frankly, have been standardized across the rest of the industry. Mm-hmm. But the nice thing is to see that they leapfrogged here by going to a standardized USB-C power delivery charging rather than something proprietary like everybody else does. So I can applaud them for that. And I would call it inspiration, call it, you know, feeling the heat of the competition behind them, whatever. They finally stepped up and brought some stuff that frankly should have been there a couple of years ago.
I also just want to add that the 15 watt wireless charging, at least to me, is a really big deal because that's as fast as the previous Note, would charge over a cable. So that's a really big deal right. for people that, you know, really enjoy wireless charging like I do. I think you do have to buy the new wireless charger to get those speeds, right? But
yeah,
I did the roundup of our best wireless chargers. And what's really interesting is, because Samsung has never quite adhered to the standard to the regular Qi standard in the sense that it uses the Qi standard up to, I think it's 5 watts, and then beyond that, it adds its own fast wireless charging standard. And then with the Note, with the S10, it improved that to fast wireless charging 2.0. And with that, you need a Samsung wireless charger or something that's been certified for it. And to achieve even 10 watts, you need a wall adapter that will provide 18 watts of charge, so of power. So you either need a quick charge 3.0 or a USB power delivery brick in the wall to get that those speeds. With this one, it's an $80 charger that you buy from Samsung. So it's not cheap. Woo-hoo. It's just a stand. So you can't lay it down flat if you don't want.
Yeah.
It's ugly, like ugly as sin.
Yeah, all of Samsung's wireless chargers have been bad. I don't understand.
I disagree.
They're all ugly.
I like the convertible one. The one from I think it was 2017.
The one that looks like a throw pillow?
Yeah, the convertible throw pillow. It's great. Hey man,
what's wrong with throw pillows?
You can change the orientation. It's really comfortable. I mean, I've sat on it a couple times. It's really nice.
It's big enough.
No, seriously, those were quite good. This one is terrible. It's ugly. It looks like a knockoff Pixel stand, except that it isn't. And there's nothing cool you can do about it. You can do with it. It doesn't give you like an ambient mode or anything. The only interesting thing that you can do is you can change the LED color and the fan speed in an app on your phone.
Oh my God. You can adjust the fan speed. This is glorious.
Isn't it? Yeah, it's terrible. So
thanks. I hate it.
I'm not a huge fan of it. However, if you want to achieve those 15 watt charging speeds, then you do need it right now. So there is that. But yeah, I agree with you. So faster wireless charging, always good in my books, especially since, Andrew, when we heard that, I think it was the S9 technically supported 15 watt charging, we bought a bunch of them from different manufacturers. I think it was Ventev and Belkin, mm-hmm. and a bunch of others. Mm-hmm. And we discovered that the phone didn't actually support those speeds through software. It just technically did through the hardware, but Samsung never turned it on.
Yeah, it only charged at like 8 to 9 watts.
Yeah. So the final thing I want to talk about just in terms of the hardware is the camera, the cameras. So nothing has changed over the S10 line here, except for the fact that the telephoto camera has a wider f2.1 aperture over the f2.6 in the S10. But you mentioned this, Andrew. You know, Samsung is falling further and further behind in camera quality over companies like Huawei and Google. Why do you think they didn't make that big that leap to a much larger sensor in the Note 10 Plus?
I don't know why they haven't really changed their main camera sensor in like 3 years. It's not just this generation. They're just subtle little tweaks. They got away with making it seem a lot newer by adding the ultra wide camera. They've slightly improved the telephoto camera a couple times in the last few years, but for the most part, it's basically just been the same sensor for the main camera with this variable aperture that doesn't really do anything, doesn't really add to the experience, and you know, tweaks to software and processing, of course, as we know, you know, those can in many cases make a bigger difference than a new sensor. But it is really interesting that they're not following the industry to this, you know, big 48 megapixel sensor type. You know, they don't have to use the exact same sensor, but this big sensor with the 4:1 pixel binning that everybody else is using and frankly getting really, really good results out of, because, well, that makes sense. You're automatically pixel binning on every single photo. And it's just, I don't understand it really, other than Samsung really has this locked in from a consistency standpoint. That main camera is extremely consistent. It takes photos that look really good. It just doesn't stand up once you put it next to something like a P30 Pro or a Pixel 3. That's kind of where their problem is at. Now, how much people are really doing that, it's kind of hard to say. We love to do that kind of stuff and compare it, but I think most people that just use a Samsung phone will be really happy with the photos that it takes and the fact that it's really fast, really consistent. It's just from a from a nerd standpoint, like, you know, where we stand on the very extreme ends of that spectrum, especially in photography, you can pick out its flaws all day long.
Yeah, I guess, like, for me, I don't love the way that the S10 takes photos of people. It's a much better landscape camera, in my opinion. I still think the Pixel 3 owns that by a mile. It preserves so much detail in the face without over sharpening. It just captures really realistic portrait photos. And I think even the Huawei is struggling with that as well, but Samsung should be better, and they're not. Hayato, what about the AR features that you saw demonstrated in the Note 10 Plus? Because I'm not just talking about like AR doodles where you can draw, you know, silly hats on Nirov's head and animate them. But there are, you know, this is the first time that Samsung is really embracing AR in a way that would be a bit more mainstream. The AR emoji, I would argue, is a nightmare fuel, and rather than something mainstream that people would actually enjoy. So, well, you know,
you don't have to argue that. That implies somebody disagrees.
But yeah, I mean, they're really trying to make a go of AR this time around. And they're using that fourth camera sensor on the back.
I mean, AR Doodle obviously was kind of a silly feature that, you know, probably nobody's going to actually use after maybe one or two times of just playing around. But the thing that they showed off on stage at Unpacked, that they actually didn't show us that in our briefings, this scanning feature where they basically just took this little beaver character. They had like a plush figure or a statue or something, and they did a little 3D scan, walked around him, and it just turned into an AR, like a completely movable AR character that you can then pin onto a person, and the character will like mirror their moves. It'll, you know, move its arms and dance around and do whatever else. It was pretty crazy to see on stage. And it kind of felt like what Sony has been doing for a couple of years, where they will scan your head and, you know, create like a 3D model of your head that you can, I don't know, I guess throw into a CAD software or like, you know, do a 3D print of yourself or something. I don't know. But it was pretty interesting to see. I mean, it's from a technical standpoint, it was really crazy to think about. I don't know how much
a bust of their own head.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know, I don't know where this would be useful for me in my daily life, but I'm sure somebody else that's a bit more creative could have a lot of fun with that. I mean, that it's really wild to think about. The only problem is, I think that only the Note 10 Plus has that depth sensor though, right? So the smaller Note 10 won't be able to do that.
Yeah.
One thing that Samsung emphasized a lot during its Unpacked presentation was improvements to video. So, you know, Andrew, they said that they're obviously with that depth sensor on the back of the Note 10 Plus, you can do live focus for video in real time with four different bokeh effects, which again is a gimmick, but it's a gimmick that a lot of people are going to have fun with. But I think more interesting is the super steady motion camera, which allows you to get this insanely stabilized video while you're moving, while the phone is shaking. And that looks incredible. And it's something that I think a lot of Samsung or a lot of Android manufacturers don't do that well, is video. They don't do video quality as well. They don't do video stabilization as well as Apple. And they don't really do video consistency as well as Apple. Like a lot of phones that you'll use will drop frames. I found that on, you know, I've used the Pixel 3 and the P30 Pro, you know, on and off for the past 4 months. Both of them don't do video great. This one looks like it's really stepping up.
Yeah. So they're basically, as far as the steadier video goes, they're just using the same system as before, but now with some additional work and some additional hardware behind it, they can sample the accelerometer and gyroscope, I think, twice as much. So you just get twice as many data points. And if you think about that, when you have, you know, something bouncing up and down, if you were to split the difference between each of those points and smooth it out, it can make a considerable difference. And it's a really fun demo because you can just see it side by side. It's impossible to miss the difference of how smooth it is. And, you know, this is something that you don't, like you said, Daniel, you don't think about it, but then when you go to record, you notice that video's not, it's a little bit more of a crapshoot than we maybe point out. Our friend Mr. Mobile likes to throw video clips, you know, being a big video person, he likes to throw a lot of video clips from the phones that he's reviewing into the reviews. And it's so funny how, you know, you get used to this super, you know, professional level video that's coming out of his camera, and then you see the huge drop off still to a phone. And sure, short clips and, you know, small things that are strategically edited and stabilized and put in there, like you can kind of fudge it and it kind of looks good. But straight out of the camera, you still run into a lot of issues with drop frames and skipping and all things like that, especially when you try to record in 4K, record in HDR, anything like that. So I think Samsung has generally done a pretty good job with video, especially if you swallow your pride and record in 1080p because the hardware can handle it. One of the biggest things to show the capability of a phone is to stabilize that video, because nobody likes the shaky cam that you get from most cell phone video.
No doubt. So Hayato, as a video editor, Samsung showed off a lot of its kind of video editing prowess on the Note 10 itself. You can use the S Pen to do more granular editing. But the showcase feature, I guess, there's two. One is that you can now zoom into, you can use microphone zooming in addition to video zooming. So you can, as you zoom in on a subject with the camera, you can direct the microphone to just pick up what's coming out of a particular part of the frame. And in post, they have a much more comprehensive video editor built into its gallery app. What's your take on that? Is it going to be, is mobile editing something that you ever actually want to do? Or is this going to be something that will get you doing it?
I mean, generally, it's not something I'm super interested in, just because, you know, trying to work with all of those tiny little details and, you know, setting keyframes and all that stuff with my fingers doesn't sound like a great time. But, you know, with the S Pen, that's kind of a perfect scenario to use it for, I think. I haven't spent much time with the video editing software, so I don't know how it stacks up to something like Adobe Premiere Rush. But I'm very, very happy to see, you know, somebody putting a priority on video editing on Android, because, you know, iOS has, on your iPhone, you can use like iMovie, or if you have an iPad, they've got that LumaFusion app that a lot of people like that sort of acts almost like Final Cut Pro. And there's not really a whole lot of that on the Android side. So I'm always happy to see more things like that. As far as the microphone, the directional microphone zooming goes, LG and I think HTC have both done similar things in the past, and I'm curious to give it a shot. I think it works really well for, at least in theory, for, you know, if you're maybe walking around the street and you just see somebody that's, you know, out there playing guitar or doing whatever else. If you're maybe doing one of the host shots that I shot of Mr. Mobile, where we, you know, he stepped out of a car. We immediately wanted to shoot him like talking to the camera as we're getting out of the car. We had to lav him up, and maybe with the Note 10, we wouldn't have to. You know, I'll have to try it all for myself, but I like the idea for sure. It's always nice to have some priority on video, I think.
All right, so here's what I'm hearing from you. You're going to shoot and edit the entire Note 10 review with a Note 10.
Let's make it happen. I'll need two phones, right, but let's make it happen.
No. You don't need two phones. What you'll do is you'll use a selfie camera and a mirror.
Of course.
And you'll record the phone just the entire time. Yeah, I think that works really well.
The more we talk about this, the more I really just don't want to do that.
Oh, fine. Whatever. See if I care. All right. Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back, and we'll talk about some of the new S Pen features that Samsung is touting with its 6-axis gyroscope and its gesture support, because, ooh boy, I don't know if that's going to make a difference, but Samsung seems to think so. We'll be right back. This episode of the Android Central podcast is brought to you by Keeps. So listen, losing your hair sucks. Guys, if you've gone through it, you know it's the worst. And two out of three guys, that's a lot of people, will lose their hair, or at least some of it, by the time they're 35. I'm 34. I should know I've lost a lot of my hair. Keeps is the easiest and most affordable way to keep the hair you have. So it offers a monthly subscription to FDA-approved products that used to cost a lot of money, but now they are available in generic versions, and you can get them between $10 and $35 a month, which is pretty cheap for something that will potentially change your life. Keeps has an up to 90% effective rate at reducing and stopping further hair loss. And some, but not all men, I have to say some, but not all, may experience hair regrowth. And at best, some men will grow up to 20% of their hair back. So you're not going to get all of it back, but you may get some of it back. The cool thing is that there are two products that Keeps offers, and you will work with a licensed physician to figure out the right treatment for you. So you're not just going to order something at random and take a big or small dose and hope for the best. You will get the right plan for you depending on what your needs are. If you're thinning at the temples, if you have a receding hairline, you know, one or both of these products can work really well for you. I used to take one of these products years and years ago, and it worked. It really did help, and I'm excited for everybody here to try it. So if you're interested in trying Keeps and getting a free month of treatment, you can go to keeps.com/ACP. That's KEEPS.com/ACP. And as always, Keeps, thank you so much for supporting the Android Central podcast. It means a great deal. All right, now back to the show. All right, so last year, Samsung introduced a Bluetooth LE powered S Pen. So you could do things like connect to your phone, and you could use the button on the S Pen to take a photo, or you know, just some you know, minor improvements to the S Pen. This year, the company's taken it even further. It's now gesture controlled, and you can use it in the camera app to, you know, zoom in and out. You can use air actions to do a whole bunch of weird stuff that I don't really understand. You can flick through photos in the gallery. You can turn the volume up and down in your music. Andrew, tell me this is as gimmicky as it sounds, because I haven't seen it in action yet.
It's actually more gimmicky than it sounds.
Oh, good.
It's funny because it ties into this discussion we've had on previous episodes and on the website about hand motions with the G8 and with the Pixel 4. And it's very similar to that. You're just trying to understand why you would stand there holding the phone in one hand and then holding the pen in the other hand and performing actions with less granular control and more chance for failure than just touching the screen. And that's kind of where we're at here. You can do things like zoom in and out with the camera, or switch between camera modes, scroll through back. The big thing is before you just had the pen button, and so you could do like a single press or a double press, and so you were limited in actions. Now you have swiping left and right, swiping up and down, moving in a circular motion in either direction, and you still have the button presses. The problem is, one, it doesn't seem to work very well. I tried it. I don't know about you, Hayato, but I tried it and I could not get it to work that often.
Yeah, I mean, half the footage of both you and Nirav trying it that I shot was, you know, just I had to scrap it because it was just you both trying to use the features and just nothing happening on the screen.
I wish you would have included some of that in the hands-on, though, just like swearing, both of Andrew and Nirav just like swearing at this terrible feature.
The funny thing is that it, I don't know, it just doesn't, I'm sure you could learn it. I'm sure you could figure out how it works. But it was not immediately intuitive about what to do, because there's no direction. It's just, you know, the things that it can do. You just don't know how far to move it, how granular the feel is. Yes, it has this gyroscope accelerometer combination in it, so it should be accurate, but I think that the tuning is still not really there. So it's actually in many ways the exact same as the discussion we had with the G8, it doesn't work 100% of the time, and B, even if it did, the things that it does are not that useful for the situation in which you have a phone in your hand already.
I think a bigger issue is that even things like the LG G8 or the upcoming Soli interactions on the Pixel 4, I think have at least more of a clearly understandable purpose, even if it's not something I would necessarily want to use all that often, where, you know, maybe my phone is sitting in a car mount while I'm driving and I don't want to look at it, but I want to change the song or whatever else, you know, something a little out there like that. But with the Note 10 and all these S Pen features, you're going to have to, if you have the S Pen in your hand, that means you had to pull it out of the phone to begin with. So like you just had the phone in your hand. There's no like,
yeah,
you're not going to
leave
it in
the
mount.
It's much more of a deliberate action.
Right.
Oh, well, I think that that's a fantastic point, because it's another barrier to using this type of thing rather than having it just kind of be around. It has to be a very explicit action. Like I've used the Note 9's S Pen to take photos before, because that's a very specific thing. You can't take this photo any other way. You want to prop the phone up, or you want to reach out, to take a selfie of a group, and it's easier to use the S Pen, you know, whatever. That makes sense, but that's also a very specific thing, and nothing else that it can do, you know, can I envision being just part of a normal day, a normal workflow where you would seamlessly do that.
No, and you're right. It creates so much more friction by putting all of that gesture support in the S Pen rather than just, you know, using something on the front of the phone to do it. Obviously, that would necessitate, as we talked about with the Pixel 4 last week, you know, Google's embracing that top notch because it needs to. It has no choice. Yeah. It has to put sensors up there. Samsung, like a lot of other companies, has decided to emphasize screen size over sensors on the front, and you give up a lot of that. I mean, for starters, we haven't really talked about it, but the in-display fingerprint sensor on the Note 10 is the same ultrasonic sensor as it is on the S10, which is a pretty bad part. Like we've come to
this is a very early generation part.
Yeah, it's, you know, 6 months after the S10 had launched, we now know just how poorly implemented this supposed better version of the in-display fingerprint sensor is, especially now that we have examples from OnePlus and Huawei and others to show that the second generation optical sensors are better, just objectively faster, way more reliable. With the P30 Pro, I do not have to think about it. It just works every time. With the Pixel 3 or 3A, the capacitive sensor on the back, it just works every time. With the S10 and S10 Plus, I never know if it's going to work. That's terrible. And I can't imagine it's any better on the Note 10.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't seem like it.
All right. I do want to talk a little bit about, some of these features that Samsung is including in collaboration with Microsoft. So Microsoft had a pretty big presence at Unpacked. And we learned a bunch of things about the phone and how it would work as a sort of desktop replacement in a way. But it's also undermining that by putting Dex as an app rather than you needing the phone explicitly. That sounds a bit confusing, but explain how it works, Andrew, because Dex is now just a part of the Note 10 experience on a Windows or a OS 10 or Mac OS PC. How does that work?
So there's kind of three different levels to this. The simplest, lowest level is deeper integration with Microsoft's Your Phone app, which is runs on the phone, runs on your computer, and pulls in things like notifications and recent photos and stuff like that, and just shows them on your computer wirelessly. So it's just a, basically a synchronization program to read your notification shade on your phone and pull it into Windows. That's kind of like your most basic version of this type of integration. Then you get you link to Windows, which is a next level of that. So your phone can be installed on any phone. They have Link to Windows, which is like a Samsung specific integration that includes things like you're going to be able to take phone calls on your computer. You're going to be able to access some of your data, get deeper information from your notification shade rather than just kind of mirroring the shade. It's going to be more of a native experience on your Windows PC. That's kind of cool in a way that your phone wasn't necessarily, especially when you talk about phone calls and text messages and things like that, being able to instantly respond from the notification center on your Windows PC. And then you can go all the way and you can plug in a cable and get DeX for PC, which is just the same DeX interface that we used before. But instead of plugging it into just a dead keyboard, mouse, and monitor, you can just plug it into a laptop over USB-C and get that DeX experience in a window or in full screen on your Windows PC. You can run all of your Android apps in a window, and you can drag and drop data between the phone, which it keeps everything secure in its own little box, and your Windows PC. Now, I don't know how many people are really using DeX, but this implementation seems to be a much better use of DeX, because you're more likely to have a laptop around that you regularly use than just a keyboard, mouse, and monitor that you're going to plug in this DeX stand to and run only the DeX software. Being able to have it on there with Windows makes a whole lot more sense to me.
Here's the workflow that I don't quite understand, because maybe it's because I don't work in an office and I don't have virtual desktops and I don't rely on compartmentalizing my work and my personal data. But there's the cloud, and when I use things, when I want to synchronize my phone to my laptop or my desktop, I rely on Dropbox. I rely on Google Photos. I have these things happen automatically. I mean, Google Drive.
Yeah,
it's just there. If I want my documents, they're already there. So DeX, I think, is interesting, but it's only interesting. DeX on your existing laptop is interesting, but it's only interesting for people who explicitly silo and cannot access what's on their phone easily on a laptop through the cloud because it's not secure.
That really is the only compelling part of it from like an enterprise standpoint. If you have an IT policy that doesn't let you take things easily between devices, yep, you could see that making sense. But for everyone else that doesn't have something as restrictive as that, just using cloud services sure seems like a whole lot easier.
I mean, I think there's an argument to be made that, you know, those cloud services, if you want a significant amount of storage, they do end up costing money. But I mean, I, at the same time, if you can afford a Note 10, you can probably afford those subscription fees.
What's also kind of interesting is that Samsung seems to be increasingly aligning itself with Microsoft. It's famously the company did not mention the word Android once on stage at the Note 10 event. This is not the first time that's happened. They don't ever actually they haven't mentioned Android for the last couple of years. But they had Satya Nadella on stage, Microsoft CEO, to talk about these integrations. With the S Pen, you can now write using handwriting, and the engine will capture that what you wrote in OCR, convert it to text, and then you can export that as a Word document. Now you can take for granted that all of Microsoft's apps, from Word to Excel to PowerPoint to Skype, are going to be pre-installed on every Samsung phone. That's been the case for a couple of years now, but this seems to be a relationship that is only getting deeper and more embedded. And I think it's an acknowledgement to some extent that Samsung is not able to build its own ecosystem. It doesn't want to anymore. And it's increasingly relying on partners like Microsoft to do the heavy software and cloud lifting for them, which I think is the right move.
That makes sense. It seems like a really mutually beneficial relationship. Samsung seems to somewhat acknowledge that their individual services that they've tried to roll out just aren't working, especially in the productivity space. You know, in some of the more in the Samsung health and lifestyle kind of stuff, maybe they've done a little bit better, but for the most part, its services have not been good. And Microsoft obviously realizes that it's not going to be doing its own phone thing. It seems like that ship has sailed. And so, and even in tablets, you know, they're doing all of this same type of stuff on the Galaxy Tab S6 and S5e. Samsung can just be their phone and small thin and light tablet, you know, arm, basically. Microsoft already realizes that the best way to go is to just have all of these services integrate with Windows and just integrate with their general Microsoft cloud platform. And you can just pre-install all those things and then you don't have to make your own phone. Microsoft has, well, from our perspective, but not so much from other people's perspective, been quietly building out a huge number of great services on Android. And it's been very interesting to see our friends over at Windows Central get really deep into Android all of a sudden, because, well, you can have an amazing Microsoft-centric experience on Android, and now you can just get it right out of the box with a Samsung phone.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the reality is that the Note 10 does run Android. It runs Android Pi. People are still going to clamor for an Android Q update when that goes public later this summer. And the whole cycle is going to start all over again, where Samsung wants to distance itself from its relationships with Google. It obviously has pre-installed Bixby on its phones rather than, you know, relying on Google Assistant, which is obviously there. It's just sort of hidden. And that's another thing that Samsung is sort of also not emphasizing. Even though Bixby is still there, they didn't mention it once on stage, whereas they spent a lot of the Note 9 launch talking up Bixby and introducing the Galaxy Home speaker, which still doesn't exist. So I think this year was strategically important for them. They, as I said, they have this relationship with Microsoft, but with the Galaxy Watch Active 2, which was also announced during the Impact event or a couple days before, they now have an Under Armour version of that, which comes pre-installed with Under Armour software. It'll integrate with Under Armour's shoes, connected shoes. And these are all, you know, things that Samsung is doing to shore up its support, and also to take on Google, which is increasingly becoming a hardware competitor as much as it is a software ally.
It just seems really smart to go with partnerships in many of these arenas. I'm glad you brought up the Under Armour partnership, because that's just a slam dunk there, where, you know, why try to force people to use Samsung Health if they're already in something more popular like Map My Run, which Under Armour owns.
Super popular. Like, it's, I think,
extremely.
Aside from Strava, it's like one of the most popular running platforms there is.
So it's like, why not just do that? You know, just as another option, just like on the phone, there are options. You can have all of the Microsoft preloaded stuff, and that's just kind of your easy on ramp. Or you can do your own thing still if you want. It's the same thing with the watch. Obviously, the tablets have a very similar experience. It just makes sense, and it is a very interesting recognition from Samsung that, okay, maybe we can't or don't need to try to do Samsung branded everything top to bottom and try to run our own, all of our own services. I think one little sneaky announcement as part of all this Microsoft stuff was that Samsung is shutting down its own cloud service and the entire, all of its cloud backups and everything on Samsung phones are going to be OneDrive based from now on. So they don't have to run their own cloud service anymore, which never made any sense. You know, all of these things, they're, you know, they don't need to go through the hassle of all this management and all of this maintenance to run a service just so it says Samsung in front of it. Like, just sign a deal and have it just happen.
Let's round up our Note 10 discussion by talking, you know, colors, price, availability, everything that people, you know, care about. And you know, I think in relation to the Note line in particular, price is increasingly a factor, right? We're getting, last year was the first year that we broached $1,000. What can people expect to pay for these two phones?
All right, $950 for the Note 10.
Oof.
And $1,100 for the 10 Plus.
Yeah,
and that's you can go $1,300 for the 10 Plus 5G, but you shouldn't buy that phone because you don't need a 5G phone yet. But, you know, that's a lot. They did up the base storage to 256 gigs on both models, which is really nice, especially for the 10 that doesn't have an SD card slot. You know, the prices aren't that insane when you compare them to the MSRPs, of course, of the S10, but they are a little crazy when you look at the current market prices for the S10 and S10 Plus, where you can get an S10 for about $700, just unlocked straight from Amazon, and you can get an S10 Plus unlocked straight from Amazon for $800-ish. You know, give or take $25, depending on when you go there. That's kind of tough because, you know, yes, there are pre-order deals to get $100 or $150 gift cards or whatever. But after that, after the pre-order discounts go away, those prices are still really high. And the S10 and S10 Plus are still modern phones that do almost all the same things. And in, you know, the case of the headphone jack, more, and they're cheaper. So, you know, Samsung's kind of struggling, fighting its own discounts there.
Hayato, a lot of people may be turned, a little, especially the power users, may be turned off by the fact that the Note 10 doesn't have a micro SD card slot or a headphone jack. But I think a lot of other people also may look at the 8 gigs of RAM and think, you know, that's not awesome compared to the 12 gigs in the Note 10 Plus. What do you think? Is that something that people should take into account when they buy the phone? Or does the fact that it runs at 1080p, which is a much lower resolution than the 1440p on the Note 10 Plus, that may offset some of that anxiety?
I mean, I'm coming from I usually use a Pixel 3, so that's double the RAM already. So, you know, to me, I'm like, oh, score, that's awesome. But you know, yeah, if you're coming from an older Note phone or an S10 or whatever else, then yeah, 8 gigs is maybe not the number you'd want to see. I really don't see that kind of leading to any performance issues, though. I think 8 gigs is more than enough for a modern Android phone. As far as, you know, the Note 10 definitely is more compromised than the Note 10 Plus, but like Andrew said in our hands-on video, The 1080p display issue is like the Note 10 Plus comes at 1080p by default anyway, even though the screen is actually 1440. They set that display resolution in the software. So yeah, you can increase the resolution, but by default, they're going to look the same. I did have a few friends at the event say that they looked at the Note 10 and 10 Plus next to each other and that the 10 looked noticeably worse to their eyes. But I really didn't have that same experience when I had both phones in my hand.
Neither did I.
I thought the Note 10 screen looked fantastic. So maybe I'm just not being as discerning as I used to be with displays, but I didn't have any complaints at all with it.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people will prefer to save that $150 and get the smaller screen as a result, especially if the sacrifices are not game-changing sacrifices. They're just, you know, they're minor sacrifices.
I'm just gonna throw out there that if you're pre-ordering it, I don't think the Note 10 is a great deal at $950 necessarily. But if you're pre-ordering it and you get that huge trade-in credit plus the instant credit they give you towards any kinds of Samsung accessories like the Galaxy Buds or whatever else, like you can get a Note 10 for, you know, five, maybe even $400 with trade-in. At that point, it kind of becomes a no-brainer to me.
Yeah, that's true. Andrew, anything we're missing that you wanted to discuss about these two phones?
No, I just think that if you have the opportunity to go try one, if you're at all on the fence about the size, you probably should. I think the thing is, if people are drawn to the Note 10 for its size, really, really, really think about whether that S Pen is going to work into your daily use, not just the, you know, the air gestures and stuff, because those won't, because they're terrible, but from a writing standpoint, or, you know, taking notes or drawing, or, you know, the precise video editing or whatever, think about how much that's really going to work into your life. And if it's not, if you're skeptical of that, which is totally fine, a lot of people are, myself included, just get yourself an S10 or an S10 Plus. You know, you're not, you know, the nothing else there makes a huge difference to justify that price difference. Of course, the pre-orders throw things off a little bit, but just keep that in mind. I appreciate the size of the Note 10. I just don't appreciate that other than the S Pen, it doesn't have much to justify being there, you know, outside of the phones that already exist.
Totally agree. And when can people buy the phone?
Well, you can just straight up go buy it now. The interesting thing is, it's a pre-order, of course, but Samsung is really typically aggressive about sending out pre-orders early. I think the street date is August 23rd. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so. Friday the 23rd.
They usually ship them with like two-day shipping a few days before the launch. So people usually start to get them a couple days before they show up in stores. Who knows with this little bit of a longer lead time than usual, if that'll be the case. But if you know it's what you want, just go pre-order it, and it'll probably show up earlier than you could get it in a store.
All right. So I would be remiss not to mention a couple other newsy things this week before we end. Android Q Beta 6 was released. It's the final beta before the public release later this summer. So we can probably, you know, it's August. It was released August 7th, the same day as the Note 10 was announced.
They fixed all the gestures, right? They all just work perfectly?
Absolutely. Yeah, they're actually amazing now. Yeah, I've been running the beta on my Pixel 3a. It's fine. I'm not happy with the gestures, even though Google wrote this very, very interesting blog post on the Android developer blog explaining its reasonings, showing a lot of data around research into what people prefer. And they said that even though most people tend to like the three button gesture more overall, it's as in like they enjoy using it, it's less friction for one-handed use, which is much more important these days for bigger phones. It's just not practical anymore, and they had to go with gestures. And if you go to that blog post, you can see their reasoning, and I highly recommend looking at it, because if you've been frustrated by some of these decisions and you're not sure why Google chose to go with the screen edge back as opposed to something, you know, a little bit more, a little bit different, something that wouldn't break so many apps, they give that explanation. And I, even though I don't necessarily agree with why they did it, I understand it. And I mean, we'll probably talk about that a bit more. And then, you know, finally, this week, we also saw another Pixel 4 leak, and I think, and I'm sure you guys agree, there's going to be a 90 Hertz display on the Pixel 4, which I'm a huge fan of, and I cannot
wait for that
even more now. So bring it on.
Sorry, is this where I say yeet?
Yeah, I was waiting for your yeet. You always bring it out at the best times.
90 Hertz yeets, big 90 time.
90 Hertz. All right, so we're going to end it there. Guys, thank you so much for getting up early to record this. And Jim, our amazing producer, thank you for editing this on a weekend. We love you long time. Thank you all for listening. If you are, thank you everybody for sending in your homework last week, talking about your experiences with rooting. We really appreciated your stories, and some of them are really funny and heartbreaking, and I will read some of them at some point in the future. Maybe we'll do like a homework pod where I just read a whole bunch of emails from people over the last few months. That's it. We're going to be back next week with another show, hopefully with better sound and fewer connection derps. And Hayato, enjoy your travels to New York again. We'll tell you all about why you're doing it next week, maybe.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm excited, but I'm already preemptively exhausted for it.
Yeah. Well, you're young, so you can handle it.
He is young and mobile.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Bye.